From inside the WAER studios.
Long outlet pass, Ryan Simmons inside! He scores the game winner! Give the assist to Don Mattona! Syracuse wins!
Finds Guerrier, open, drives baseline, goes up, and hammers it home! Quincy Guerrier, hello!
And it's intercepted! Andre Sisco!
Flings it from 75 feet past the scoreboard, and he connected! Elijah Hughes throws up a prayer at the buzzer! And somehow it's answered.
It's the Ostrom Avenue Podcast.
The Orange, take the Camping World Bowl.
Syracuse gets the program signature win it always needed. Perhaps the biggest upset in program history.
Taj Harris passed the 45. He's past midfield. 30, 25, 20, 15, 10, 5. Touchdown, Syracuse.
And one, Joe Girard.
Three ball, Buddy Boeheim. He got all three of them. Huge shot from Buddy.
Pass point. Black got it. Game winner. Brendan Curry with the winner.
Hughes left wing charges and slams with the right hand.
Killing a three at the buzzer. Oh, it's good. He made it.
And here's your hosts, Owen Valentine and Ben Shulman.
Welcome into the Ostrom Avenue Podcast. As always, alongside Ben Shulman, I'm Owen Valentine. Some big news in Syracuse football and ACC football this year or this week with a 10-game season, conference play plus one non-conference game. So a good sign for the possibility of ACC football coming, but we're not going to talk football this week. We talked football and Syracuse football recruiting the last 2 weeks. If you want to check those episodes out, you can do so wherever you get your podcasts. And while you're there, give us a review, 5 stars, ideally, if you like what we do. But we'd love to hear your feedback, or you can reach out to us on Twitter at Ostrom Avenue Pod. We've got a lot of stuff in the works on Twitter. We'd love to have your interactions there, your feedback. Our DMs are open. You could send us a tweet. And we're going to have, you know, a special Syracuse basketball hypothetical episode in the next couple of weeks. So be ready, because we're going to need your feedback to really develop that as well as we can. So at Ostrom Avenue Pod on Twitter, that's talking Syracuse football, Syracuse basketball, Syracuse lacrosse. But this week we're switching things up. We've talked football the last 2 weeks. It's Syracuse basketball time. We've got a really special guest in Paul Biancardi. Spent 16 years as a coach in college basketball, now the national recruiting director for ESPN. So he's talking, you know, national landscape in terms of recruiting, Syracuse basketball in terms of recruiting. So we'll start with the 2020 recruiting class. Three names: Kadari Richmond, Woody Newton, Frank and Salem, true freshmen coming in, and then Alan Griffin, the transfer from Illinois. We'll start with the three freshmen, not the biggest names in terms of recruiting, but all three guys I think could be big contributors this year and maybe in the future as well.
Yeah, there's something to like about everyone, I think, picked up in this class, and especially Kadari Richmond. He's the 4-star recruit. He's, I believe, in the 70 range on the ESPN 100. And he looks like a player to me. I've watched a bit of his high school tapes. I really like what Kadari Richmond can do in this offense. I think he can impact Syracuse immediately as a freshman. He's listed as a small forward by 24/7 Sports. I think ESPN lists him as a guard. I'd probably consider him more of a guard. But regardless of position, he's going to be a playmaker. He likes to have the ball in his hands. Decent shooter, showed an ability to shoot from the outside in high school, but what he really does is drive to the basket and make plays. He's not afraid to improvise, great at kickouts and dump offs on drives to big men in the key. And I just think that he's going to fit really well into the offense, and maybe he won't be the same type of knockdown mid-range and outside shooter, but I just see a little bit of Tyus Battle in Kadari Richmond. I think that he can really control and be the focal point of this offense, not in year one, but going forward with the team.
Yeah, I mean, I watched a 60-second clip of him from the 2019 National Prep Showcase from when he was over at Brewster Academy. And in 60 seconds, he showed so many assets to his game. Really strong recruiting tape in that aspect to show what he can do. But I mean, it's literally 60 seconds. I think it's a 58-second video. Really good distributor, can score at the rim, can shoot, can dribble, can literally do anything. A strong defensive presence, strong rebounding. And I was a little bit blown away that in 50 seconds, I was able to say, wow, 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 to so many different aspects of his game. I think he's going to be an immediate contributor this season, and he's going to be a long-term guy. He's not a one and done, or maybe even a two and done type deal. He's going to be here for a little bit. So it's going to be interesting to see how he can develop as well. I think he's going to be able to put a little more weight on, still a bit small right now. I'd like to see him put 5-10 pounds on. in the next, you know, few months leading up to this 2020-2021 season, if it does happen on time or whenever that does happen. But he's going to be an immediate impact guy, possibly breaking the starting lineup. If not, is going to be a really big role player off the bench, possibly a big-time sixth-man candidate. But he does it all, and he's going to be able to really contribute early on. He's going to be able to get to the rim and shoot, and it's really what Syracuse needs in this kind of not necessarily rebuilding time, but prepping, because the 2021-2022 classes are making out to be a really big deal. And so to get as much experience under their belt with a guy like Richmond and Newton and Salem as they continue to progress is going to be a really big deal looking towards the future.
I think it's really important for Richmond as well that he can play on and off the ball. He, you know, there are other big recruits on his team at Brewster Academy, so he wasn't always the focal point of the offense, but he just fits in where he can get in. He's not a ball stopper, even though he's a bit of a dominating presence. And then my favorite thing about him is he's really creative at the rim, lots of up and unders and great body control in the air, but he's not afraid to also just straight line drive right at you. He'll go into a defender, draw some contact, and try and get up at the rim. And that's not something that we've seen a ton of on the Syracuse team the last few years. So I think there needs to be more downhill straight line drivers, kind of like Elijah Hughes. And I see Kadari Richmond as one of those guys.
I agree completely. To move on a little bit now to Woody Newton, he's going to be a three-star guy, power forward. There's a lot of height out of these three guys. You go 6'5", 6'8", 6'10". So a really kind of – that's what Jim Boeheim's been looking for in the past, I'm going to say, half decade to decade. Obviously, he's always recruited long for the 2-3 zone, but it seems like there's been a bigger emphasis in the more recent years. And there's a ton of length out of these three. I think Newton's going to be a big-time guy. And I don't want to go too bold, but I feel like he could be a Michael Benajet-type player. I think he's not going to be an immediate impact right off the bat, but, I mean, Benajet was – 14, 15 minutes his first year at Syracuse, and then progressed into an 18-point scorer before he left. So I think it's going to be a similar progression from Newton, maybe not the biggest contributor early on, but a guy that is going to be able to develop and play a really big role later on. He's a strong defensive player, and he can really do it all. He can shoot, he can score at the rim, but he's going to be able to really find himself and be a strong player. I think both of these guys, and Richmond and Newton, are going to be really versatile guys and really big contributors early on and finding that role and really being able to run with what they've got.
Yeah, with his length and athleticism, I mean, he can make an immediate impact in the zone. And I like the tools he has as an offensive player. I agree with you. I think there's still going to be a little bit of time for development. There's still some parts of his game that are a bit raw. I don't know if his footwork is all there, but he's got a good jump shot. He's definitely the best shooter of this class. I think he's a much stronger three-point shooter than Richmond. And to have a 6'8 guy that can stand out on the wing and make shots and also drive towards the basket and even rebound a little as well, that's the prototypical player that Jim Boeheim wants. So I see him coming on in years two and three as well. Especially if he can really develop his offensive skills this year, whether it's in a bench role or just in practice, he could be a big-time scorer for this team and maybe even a leading scorer for this team going forward.
Yeah, completely agree. And then the last of the three incoming freshmen, you've got Frank Anselm, 6'10", 220 center. I don't necessarily think he's going to be an immediate impact guy. I would think he redshirts. In my opinion, he should redshirt. I think when you look at what Syracuse has down low this season with Dolajai, with Sidibe, with Jesse Edwards, and with John Bolajac coming off a redshirt year, I think it makes the most sense for him to really work in practice and develop and put a little more size on so he can be a big contributor next year when Syracuse loses Sidibe and Dolajai. But I think, once again, I think this is three guys that Syracuse has brought in that are all going to be contributors. I don't think there's really a true dud in this class that is just kind of coming in and you don't expect anything from him. I think you can expect something from all three of these guys coming in for the Orange, whether it's immediate in the case of Richmond and possibly Newton, or a little bit more long-term in the case of Anselm down low. So it's going to be interesting to see how he pans out. Obviously, Syracuse has struggled with big, so I think there's the most question marks with him as to whether or not he can put some size on and become an offensive presence, but he's got the size down low. He's a pretty strong defensive guy. He can be a shot blocker. He can rebound. His development offensively is what I think you're going to really have to watch and keep a magnifying glass on.
For sure. That's the biggest part of his game that needs to make a jump before he starts being a regular college player. I think he can play decent defense right now in the college game, but it's just a really raw offensive game he possesses right now. What I do like about him is, even though he does have to put on weight, we talked about it before we hopped on, he's already the heaviest guy on this team. He comes in with a much different build than Sidibe or Chukwu. He's not thin. Like, he needs to fill out, but he's a pretty muscular guy already. Mm-hmm. And considering that was just his junior and senior years in high school that we were watching highlights of him, I think put on a strong workout program from the Syracuse training staff, he could potentially beef up from 220 to 230 or even 240 pounds. Mm-hmm. It's been a long time since we've watched a Syracuse big man bully people down low. Yeah. I'm excited to watch Frank Anselm, if he puts some weight on, really start to dominate guys in the post. Because on defense for me, it wasn't just shot blocking, but he was altering a lot of shots. There were guards driving into the lane, and he's just a presence inside that you have to watch out for. So I think he'll be an immense help on defense. And then if he can develop on offense, he's got a little Bam Adebayo in him, I think.
Okay.
When I was watching him, and I like it. Maybe not like a this year Bam Adebayo. That would be a big jump, because Bam Adebayo is a heck of a player now. But he's going to run up and down the floor. I think he's coordinated. His skills just aren't refined. Like, I don't think his footwork can be improved. It's just not there yet.
Yeah.
But he doesn't, like, look awkward. At 6'10", he looks pretty athletic running up and down the floor. And I think he'll be great in transition for the Orange going forward.
I think that the names that Syracuse fans are missing are the Orinze Onowaku, the Rick Jackson, the true bigs down low at the center of the zone and the center of the offense. And maybe he won't get that big, but he's got the ability to kind of be that first bigger presence that Syracuse has had down low. Obviously, DeJuan Coleman could have, but never really panned out as in terms of, you know, becoming that offensive power, that strong defensive guy. So it could be him. It could be him if he can put a little weight on and start to develop. He could be that big-bodied big that Syracuse fans have been just waiting for in the past 5 years. So that could be the answer they've been looking for, whether it's next year, a couple of years down the road. He's got the potential to do that. Just one more guy to hit on quickly, as there's some question marks around whether or not he will be granted his eligibility this year. Illinois transfer Alan Griffin. He's a good shooter, can score at the rim, a lot of upside potential to him. Obviously, that's just going to revolve around whether or not he can be granted that eligibility.
Definitely. And if he is granted that eligibility, he'll be an immediate help. And honestly, I don't see how he wouldn't start right now and kind of slot into the position that Elijah Hughes has left open. I don't want to make this comparison because I don't think it's completely fair, but I do think that there's a little bit of a Hughes-like idea with taking Griffin. You know, he played Illinois is a bigger school than East Carolina, but he played, you know, 18 minutes last year. Hughes played 20 the year before he transferred to us. Mm-hmm. He's scoring 9 points and 5 rebounds in those 18 minutes. So an incredibly efficient use of his time. And he's a guy who knows, once you give him 30 minutes, he could be a 15, 16, 17 point scorer. He's a really good shooter, had an over 61% effective field goal percentage last year, which is really solid. He can shoot the three, score inside. Good free throw shooter as well. I just think there's a lot to like, and he is coming close to home. So while obviously I don't know if they're going to grant eligibility, only they know that, it does seem likely that he could get that moving close to home exemption. He's from Ossining, New York. So it's, you know, coming from Illinois back to Syracuse. It makes sense. It fills out the criteria.
Yeah. And I'll go and say this. I think that Alan Griffin is – his eligibility determines the outcome of this season for Syracuse basketball. If he can play, Syracuse basketball will be maybe not a contender for the ACC championship, but a solid ACC team, and will be in that upper third of the ACC possibly. Obviously not the top two or three, but that 4, 5, 6 range again, I think Syracuse could easily fall into that with Griffin in play. If he doesn't get that eligibility, I think there's a big drop, and I think that they're going to have another troublesome year and struggle to make the NCAA tournament. So I think his eligibility is going to be make or break for Syracuse basketball this season. Obviously, if he's playing next year, it'll still be okay because of the guys coming in and some of the stuff like that. But the Syracuse is going to want him this year, and that's going to make this team you know, a competitive team and a team that can compete for maybe a top 25 ranking at some point in the season or something along those lines. So that's going to be the name to look out for. And that news should be coming, you know, in the next coming weeks, because we're not that far out from basketball season and the start of all that. But to look a little bit more into this recruiting class, into the 2021 recruiting class, into the ACC recruiting landscape as a whole, we brought on Paul Biancardi. Ben caught up with him earlier this week. He is one of the most knowledgeable guys in the game, knows all of these guys, has talked with most of them, and has really started to develop as so much knowledge. So a lot for us to learn, a lot for you guys to learn. Once again, Paul Biancardi, the National Recruiting Director for ESPN.
I'm here with special guest Paul Biancardi. Biancardi coached college basketball for two decades and is the National Recruiting Director for ESPN. Thanks for joining us, Coach. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great, Ben. Thank you for having me.
As the National Recruiting Director for ESPN, you keep track of the recruits from high schools all over the country, as well as the colleges from coast to coast that are pursuing them. How has your job changed during the quarantine?
Well, Ben, that's a great question, because it really took like a 360, no pun intended, right? You went from going to live events and being out all the time, whether they're high school events or travel circuit events or camps. Now you're completely in the house. So you have to go back now on film and watch all the games during the season that I didn't get a chance to watch. So I loaded up with film in April and May, but there's only so much film you can watch. There's so many games, so many clips, so many workouts to watch. And then it kind of died down come in June, where I did a lot of recruiting, maybe more on a Zoom level, where I was doing this with high school prospects. It gave me the chance to get to know them as people. So I'd pull up a Zoom, 30 minutes with top recruits in the country, and just kind of chat it up, talk it up, and try to find out more about them off the court so I can help my evaluation on the court.
Do you throw any like sneak riddle questions in there? Is it like an NFL workout interview, or you just talking back and forth?
Talking back and forth, trying to figure out family life, commitment to academics, their character, you know, maybe their maturity level, hobbies, likes, maybe some new skills they picked up during COVID, any interesting background stories, any type of adversity maybe they've been through in their past life prior COVID, and just want to get to know them more as people and maybe what basketball means to them and the purpose why they play. And it's an awesome one-on-one setting as we're experiencing right now.
Has it allowed you to actually talk to more recruits? I know not technically face-to-face, but do you get more FaceTime with high school players than you would have used to?
No question about it. I mean, if we were on the old schedule, I'd be traveling every weekend. March with college basketball, and then the AAU season starts up right at the end of March. April is a complete blur. I mean, I'm gone half the month of April. May is strong with AAU, and then June is camps and more events. So I get on the phone with them, but I probably end up texting with them more. But by being in and by them being in, I mean, we're locked in, right? We were locked in for 4 months, and I got a chance to do Zoom calls all day long with, you know, seniors and juniors. I stayed away from the sophomores. I want those guys to mature a little bit before I talk to them. But, yeah, I've had a chance to talk to the nation's best, and I've really enjoyed my conversations with those guys because it allowed me to figure out who they were as people. And in my opinion, very humble opinion, because evaluating, you know, everybody does it and a lot of people do a great job with it. But to me, the person protects the player. So if you have a good character off the court, I think that protects your on-court talent.
Who was your most interesting interview? Is there a name that stuck out? Is there someone that you talked to and after you were like, this guy is going to be a great player, just from that conversation?
Wow. Yeah. That's, I feel like I'm talking to your dad now with the interviews. The questions are coming at me. Which, by the way, Dan Shulman has never interviewed me live. So let's just put that out there. This is the first Shulman. I love it. My favorite Shulman, by the way, now. I'll tell you what, Chet Holmgren.
Chet Holmgren.
Yeah, he was number two in the ESPN 100. Jonathan Kuminga was one. He reclassified. We knew that was going to happen. But Chet Holmgren, you know, he's an old soul up in Minnesota, but he's a 7'1 old soul with a 7'5 wingspan. I mean, he's a world-class shot blocker. But off the court, you know, he went to the playground during COVID to just shoot around. He went in his driveway to do conditioning. He likes to stay home with his family. He's a simple guy. He's very transparent. You know, his dad was a great player at Minnesota. So I got to know him on a personal level. And he really, you know, as a 7-footer, you don't know what they're going to say, right? And, you know, I said, what's the hardest thing about being tall? He goes, is finding pants. So it was a great conversation. He has a good personality, dry sense of humor. And my goodness, Ben, when you see him someday on the court live, he's a center defensively because he blocks everything, blocks the sun, a world-class shot blocker. But offensively, he has true perimeter skills. I mean, shoots the three, handles it. He looks like he's playing basketball on stilts.
Well, I look forward to seeing him. Your job has changed a lot. The recruiter's job has changed a lot as well. What do you think is the biggest challenge for schools during this time?
Well, the face-to-face interaction live, you know, that human element of visits where kids could go to campuses or the coaches could go to the homes and visit, that was eliminated. And so you lose that. You know, when somebody walks into your home, like this Zoom call is great, but if I walked into your, looks like your home office there, if I walked into that, there's a little different feel between us. We have to kind of eyeball each other a little more. You can read body language. You can't read body language that much on a Zoom call. So I think the human element was missing, the body language, the comfortness with people in a live setting was eliminated. Now, kids, as you know, they like the technology part of life, but I don't think they love the virtual recruiting. I think it took a while for kids to get used to the virtual recruiting. The colleges were, you know, just putting campus tours on the screen. They were having the strength coach come on. They were having the whole coaching staff. They'd have players come on. I thought that was cool. They brought players on when they were talking with the recruits. So it's a whole new world. And so the human element part of it, I think it's difficult for both player and coaches, because at the end of the day, you make a decision based on relationships and trust. And sometimes it's hard to trust over a computer.
Do you see any positives on either side, whether it's from the athlete side or from the school side, with this virtual recruiting?
Well, from the school side, I mean, obviously, when we get back to normal, whatever that is, whenever it is, schools now know that they can recruit virtually. And I don't think I never heard the word Zoom. I don't know about you. Pre-COVID, FaceTime, yes. A lot of coaches did FaceTime, but Zoom became, you know, the number one way. So I think that's going to continue. And that saves a college budget really well. Now, some schools that, you know, like Syracuse and, you know, Kansas and Kentucky and North Carolina, UCLA, those budgets for the Power Fives, you know, they'll spend it. But when you start getting down to that next level, maybe the Atlantic 10, and some other conferences, the mid-majors after that, and the low majors, and even Division II and III. I think you're going to see a lot. You know, they're going to love this because it saves their budget. But you have to get out and evaluate in person, because it's hard to get a feel of a player. Nobody's offering scholarships based on Zoom calls and maybe highlights. Maybe there have been, but very few are going to offer a scholarship if they haven't seen somebody live. And I think from the player's standpoint, they can control it a little more, right? They can control their recruiting a little more in terms of who they want to talk to and when they want to talk to that person. But I know from talking to the players, they love having the college coaches on the sidelines during the summer events. And that wasn't the case.
So are you expecting some big wave once in-person games are back and schools can see talent once again, of a lot of signings, because there's been a holdup of guys who teams just can't go out and see play right now?
No question about it. Class of 2021 is the class that really has to be patient, because they were COVID affected by COVID in their recruiting. So they're going to have to be patient. major schools have seen some of the players, but not all of them. And even the ones that they have seen, you know, they were still recruiting seniors at the time, class of 2020. So it's going to be a big wait and see game. I think the high school regular season, hopefully we have one, and college coaches will come out to that. If there's not a high school season, I do know that summer programs, you know, the travel teams, they are talking about running some events in the effect that there's not high school games, or maybe high school starts later. Maybe they start earlier. We don't know. We're waiting to see what football does. But it's really a wait and see, trial and error. But Zoom, virtual recruiting is going to be used, I think, for a long time now.
So in 2020, Syracuse's recruiting class is ranked 38th nationally by 24/7 Sports, 8th in the ACC. What are your thoughts on the incoming freshmen for the Orange, assuming we have a season?
Well, I mean, they've always recruited well. I was at Boston College in the 90s when they had some studs on their team each and every year. And they continue to recruit to that 2-3 zone. That's how they recruit long, lean athletes that develop over time. Richmond, the kid from Brewster Academy, Kaderi Richmond, I believe his name is.
Yes.
You know, he really fits that mold of a long, lean athlete, a guy who can rebound down in the zone, scores off the dribble. I like him a lot. The other young man, I believe, is Frank Anselm, the big kid from Prolific Prep. Now, he's a monster. I mean, he's a monster. He's the rim protector. He's the rebounder. Richmond is more of the wing type of player that they like to get. Big Frank is going to pound you inside on the glass, in the paint, at the rim. He's kind of raw offensively, so a coach would probably put him in the middle of the zone defensively to protect, and offensively, you know, put him on the blocks. The third member of their recruiting class, their name escapes me on that one.
Woody, yeah. I think it's Woody Newton out of Maryland.
Oh, yeah, the 6'8 kid, long, fluid athlete. Now, he's probably the best scorer of the three in my mind in terms of shooting the basketball. He's a capable three-point shooter. Richmond is more off the dribble and on the glass, offensive rebound putbacks and drives. Woody Newton. Benny's in the next class. Woody Newton is a guy who's long, lean, athletic, fluid. They want to bulk those guys up. They want to make those guys three-point shooters. But all the players that they have, it's always recruited to the zone to play on top. Be big on top, be long in the back, and be huge in the middle.
So you mentioned Richmond at 91. He's the only Syracuse recruit in the ESPN 100. And this has been the lowest presence that Syracuse has had on that 100 since 2017. What do you think is preventing the Orange from grabbing big recruits like they did in the early to mid 2010s?
Kentucky, Kansas, Duke. You want me to keep going? I mean, those programs have – listen, the one-and-done era, whenever it started, I think it was 2006 or 2007, that's when I believe the one-and-done came into effect. So, you know, John Calipari was at Memphis at the time, and he really got into that one-and-done stuff. And then when he got to Kentucky, he said, I just don't want to get one one-and-done guy. I want to get a team of one-and-done guys. And so he did it. He was extremely successful. The other programs started to do it. Kansas, Duke jumped on board. North Carolina was up and down with the one and dones. They had their little issue with their academic, call it if you want, situation. So they didn't get a lot of one and dones. UCLA under Steve Alford was getting some one and dones. Oregon got their share. So, I think Jim Boeheim kind of got away from it. I think he tried. Every coach tries to get the one-and-done guys. But when you're not getting that love back and you can't beat those schools that I just mentioned, you go after the next-tier guy. And sometimes playing the zone, believe it or not, other schools use that in negative recruiting to say, hey, you know, if you want to be a pro, don't go to Syracuse because they play zone. The NBA's man-to-man, and then Jim Boeheim says, look at all the pros that I have that played for me. So it becomes, you know, a war of words, if you will. But I still think that when you look at Syracuse and their success, it's been consistent. Obviously, in the 90s and in the 2000 and 2010, it was incredible. But they've still been one of the premier programs, in my mind, in the country, even during their tough, they've had a couple of tough seasons. I mean, when you're the head coach somewhere 40 years, you're going to have some down years, but they have had incredible seasons. And I just think they go after a different guy right now, a guy who's going to be a possibly a four-year player or maybe a two and out guy. But they're still going after the top guys, but I think they're also realizing that they have better success with that next level guy. And you can win with those guys. I mean, Villanova, Virginia, look at Baylor last year. They were number one in the country, I think, for 5 weeks. And, you know, they had some four stars, and I think they had only one five-star guy in their roster.
So you mentioned a second ago Frank Anselm, about calling him a rim protector, saying that he was a big guy in the middle. Syracuse has had some interior issues, or whatever you want to call it, inside getting offensive production out of the bigs. Do you expect a guy like Anselm to develop that offensive game going forward?
It's going to take a while. I mean, he is raw. The hands aren't great. The footwork is still a work in progress. Doesn't understand where he is with his back to the basket. That takes time. You're 6'10", you're 200-plus pounds. It's hard to play with your back to the basket. You can't see the basket when you catch the ball. First, you got to catch the ball, and then you got to locate. I think in time, he'll become a good offensive threat, but right now it's offensive rebound putbacks, you know, running the floor, maybe a screen and a slip to the basket. But you need an interior presence, especially on the defensive end, I believe, to win college basketball. Do you need one on the offensive end to win? No. To win a championship? Probably so. But you need him on the glass without a question. And when he protects the rim, that gets Syracuse out and running in the zone. The guards are already way out high. The wings are already really wide. So anything he can block or change gets Syracuse in conversion.
And you said Newton was the main scorer out of the three. So what should we expect from Richmond? What do you think his role will be as a freshman, and what kind of impact will he make?
Well, I think he's going to start. I mean, I don't think he's going to shoot the ball all that well, but I think he's going to score. When Syracuse gets out and run, I think he's a guy you'll see as a finisher. I think when you're in the half court set, he's going to take you off the dribble. And then any offensive rebound putbacks, he's very good at getting to the glass. You know, he's good inside the arc. So anything that happens within inside the arc, I think he's a guy that will score. If you can surround him with some shooters, that opens driving lines. And that's where he's best. He's really good at driving the basketball to the basket, changing direction with the dribble. He can do a little one-on-one, little isolation. You can put him at the elbows. You can put him on the baseline. But he's going to score off the drive.
So now talking a bit about the rest of the ACC. Last season was a bit of a down year for the conference, although we didn't get to see it finish out. And 2020 isn't necessarily the best year in terms of top 10 recruits. The only guy in the top 10 that's going to an ACC school is the number 5 recruit, Scotty Barnes, who's going to Florida State. What should opponents expect to see from Barnes this year?
Well, I compared him to a Draymond Green type, and that's not an exaggeration. He's a poor man, obviously. I mean, he's 6'8", he's chiseled. And I call him a point forward. He rebounds it very well. He's the ultimate defender. He can bring it up the floor. He can initiate an offense. You can run your offense through him, whether it's at the elbows, the high post, wherever you want to put him, he can facilitate. And he is just relentless on the glass as a defender, not a shooter. Everything is inside the arc with him, but he does it at a really high energy level. He's the highest rated recruit to come into the ACC. And you talked about, you know, Florida State getting him. When you look at the ESPN class rankings, you know, Duke is number 2 and North Carolina is number 3 in class rankings. They got a whole bunch of ESPN top 100 players. Nobody inside the top 5, but still a great crop for each school.
And that was a great segue into my next question, specifically about Duke, because that's a big team that Syracuse fans like to focus on. At SU, we're accustomed to seeing Duke bring in just obscene numbers of top recruits for their one-and-done factory. However, the Blue Devils are nowhere to be found in the top 10, and that hasn't happened since 2012. Do you think this is a down year, or it's just a bigger crop of mid-level talent, maybe more depth in terms of just the 1, 2, 3 type stars?
Well, I look at Duke's recruiting, and since 2014, they've had the number 1 or the number 2 class. I mean, that's incredible right there by itself. They've gotten more than their share of one and dones, and they've got some guys that, you know, guys that are going to stay there for multiple years. And then, of course, like every other school, guys transfer out. I love Duke's class this year. I think they bring back some returning players. They bring in a whole new crop. They have every position covered when it comes to next season, from the point guard to the center spot. And their most talented player, Jalen Johnson, he reminds me of Grant Hill with muscles at a young age. He's 6'8", 6'9". He is smooth. He is explosive. And he is skilled. So I think Duke will be right there when it comes to the, you know, basketball polls, you know, at the end of the season next year.
Assuming we have a season between Duke's class, North Carolina's class, Scotty Barnes, even Kadari Richmond, who's your pick for preseason ACC Freshman of the Year? If you had to make a choice.
Well, you put me on the spot. Great question again. I have to go with Scotty. Well, no, I'm going to strike that from the record. Okay, Leonard Hamilton loves to bring his freshmen off the bench. Doesn't want to start them. Think about Patrick Williams this year. He's going to be a lottery pick in the draft. He came off the bench for a great Florida State team. Leonard likes to bring his guys along slowly. So I'm going to pick from Duke or Carolina. And Carolina has the number three recruiting class. You talk about most improved teams in the country, Carolina will be the single most improved team in the country. They couldn't shoot last year. They were dysfunctional at times. They had some injuries. Cole Anthony was out for a while. They were big, but they could not shoot the ball. They bring in a crop of shooters. And they bring in, if you can believe this, Ben, even more size in the front court. They bring in a 7-footer who can shoot it and a 6'10 guy who can rip it off the rim. So Carolina is going to be great next year. I'm going to go with ACC Rookie of the Year. I'm going to go with Caleb Love, the point guard for North Carolina. You know, they had Kobe White a couple of years ago. They had Cole Anthony. He really never got into a rhythm, I didn't think, this year for North Carolina. Caleb Love is a physical scoring point guard. Roy Williams going to hand him the ball. He's going to have all kinds of young talent around him. He'll have some veterans back in the front court. They have Playtech, the shooter, up by, I think he's up by Albany, up in New York area. So they got some guys coming back. Leaky Black, 6'7 wing. So I'm going to go with Caleb Love as your ACC Rookie of the Year.
All right. I'll mark that down and hold you to it. Moving ahead to 2021, SU already has one four-star recruit committed, ESPN's 50th-ranked prospect, Benny Williams. What about Williams should Orange fans get excited about for a season from now?
Well, first of all, he's got time to develop and get stronger because he is, you know, he's still painfully thin in many ways. But he's a guy who can shoot it. I like his shooting ability. He can handle the ball on the perimeter. He's a guard and a forward, so he plays that mixture role. Now, defensively, if they can put him on the top of the zone, it would be incredible because you're looking at 6'8 with great length. Offensively, he's a shooter, he's a driver, but he's also a ball handler, so he can get them into offense if they need so. But more of a guy who can score off the drive with the three-point shot, and I think he gives them really good offensive versatility. And, of course, the length on the wing, but he's got to get stronger. I mean, he is not strong at all, but he's got time to develop. I think he's got a lot to work with. He's got plenty of time to work on it.
And he's fast enough to play near the top of the zone or on the wing?
Well, he's long enough. You know, fast enough is another question. You don't have to be fast so much at the top of the wing. You got to be long and you got to be quick. So I think he's got to take that pencil stance. I call it a pencil because he's straight up and down. You know, a lot of guys want to play like a statue, like a pencil. And you got to get the legs wide, your stance. You got to get your butt down. He's got to live lower in the game. But, yes, I think you can put him at the top. And I played against Jim Boeheim for 7 years when I was at Boston College. He'll put big guys up at the top as much as he can. It becomes an offensive question. Can he function offensively as a two-guard?
So now I want to talk about two guys that the Orange have offered for 2021, but, of course, it's still up in the air. First, Kennedy Chandler, who's the 11th-ranked player on the 2021 100. He has offers from top schools like Duke, Kentucky, North Carolina, and Kansas, who I think you all mentioned as reasons that Syracuse isn't grabbing top recruits right now. Do you think Syracuse has a chance against these blue blood programs? And if you had to guess, where do you think he'll end up?
No, in Tennessee.
Okay, off the board. I will say Tennessee was the last team that I didn't put in there as a team to mention. So now I feel like I've dissed the Volunteers. But why Tennessee?
I just think they've built a great relationship with him. And I think that, you know, they've had so much success with Grant Williams and Schofield. Now they brought in a top 10 class. They've got three top 50 prospects. The official visit went really well. There was a great connection between Kennedy Chandler, assistant coach Kim English, Rick Barnes, who used to be in the Big East, and he used to be in the ACC, right? Clemson head coach in Providence. I think there's a strong connection there, and I'm going to consider them, you know, the favorite in my opinion. Don't know anything that you don't know, but I do know the visit went very well, and I know they're very high on Tennessee, but you know, this is a long race. This is like the Kentucky Derby. This is going to go around a mile and a half. And, you know, Kentucky's in there really strong. You mentioned all the other schools. I mean, this kid can go wherever he wants. He is the best point guard in the class of 2021.
So now maybe we'll lower our expectations a little. Another Syracuse pursuant recruit is the 70th ranked player, power forward Samson Johnson. What's your feeling on his likelihood of ending up in Orange? He's got offers from Xavier, Connecticut, as well as others.
Yeah, St. John's is in the mix hard for him. He played at the Patrick School, had a chance to see him a lot last year. Now you're getting more realistic with your expectations. but again, we're talking about a top 100 player. Let me just give you a little perspective for a second. There's about 1,000 Division I players every year that go from high school to college, right? 351 Division I schools. They give out an average of 3 scholarships. So you're looking at 1,100 Division I players, we'll say. So if you're in the top 100, you're elite, just because you're not in the top 10 or top 25, but you're still an elite prospect. Heck, if you're in the top 200, you're really, really good. So I'm just trying to, you know, give you some more hope there. And I want Syracuse fans, if you get Samson Johnson, you've done very well. He's improved a lot, in my opinion. He's long. He's athletic. He can shoot the ball facing up. We talked about Frank Anselm not shooting the ball at all right now, but Johnson can shoot it on the face up. He's a great tip-in dunker. He's an excellent shot blocker. He's that long, lean athlete who can score, run, defend, block shots, rebound. He brings a lot to the table. Syracuse can get him, that would be outstanding. You mentioned the other schools. I think St. John's is in the mix heavily for him. I think Connecticut and Xavier.
If Syracuse ends up landing Johnson, speaking in hypotheticals, they would have 2 4-star power forwards that are at a very similar height. Do you think Williams and Johnson can fit together on the court, or Jim Boeheim would have to get creative?
No, I think they fit on the court. Benny Williams, you know, he's more 6'8". He's more of that small forward, stretch four. I consider Johnson more of a center. Now, they may recruit him as a forward because everybody wants to play a size down, right? Centers want to be forwards. Forwards want to be small forwards. Small forwards want to be point guards. I'm sorry, shooting guards. Shooting guards want to be point guards. So, but he can play the forward spot. You know, he could play next to a center if he had to. Defensively, I think Jim Boeheim loves that. You're talking about, say he was on the wing and then you had Frank Anselm in the middle, 2 6-10s. They're going to trap the short corner. You're not going to be able to, you know, it's going to be tough to get shots off against them. So I can see those two guys playing together. Absolutely, Johnson and Williams playing together. That's easy.
So outside of the guys I've just mentioned, are there any other prospects that come to mind that you think the Orange might have a chance landing that could help them in 2021?
2021, you know, the recruiting changes so much. And I say that because kids change their list all the time. I don't know where kids are going anymore until they start to shave it down to their final five. The list is fluid all the time. Syracuse, you know, schools today, you talk about Zoom and virtual recruiting. Schools are making offers to kids just to make offers because they don't want to lose their recruiting traction. And if they don't offer, all the other schools are offering. And they're offering scholarships to kids they've never seen live. It could backfire to some degree. I know I said earlier that there isn't a lot of, you know, offers going on, or maybe kids taking them. But schools know when a kid's going to take an offer, when they're not. So I really don't know who else Syracuse is involved with. You got transfers going out. You got transfers coming in. And the transfer market's going to change the game. In the future, when transfers can play right away, you're going to see schools like Syracuse take a transfer from a different conference who's a proven player who can play right away, and they don't have to go through this recruiting process as much, and they get a player who's ready to help them on the court. So I think the transfer market, initial eligibility will hurt the high school recruit. Won't hurt the prime top 100 guys, but it will hurt that next level.
Well, the Orange have a very exciting transfer getting to play in 2021 in Alan Griffin from Illinois. Paul Biancardi, coach of college basketball for two decades, now the national recruiting director at ESPN. Thank you so much for joining the program. Really appreciate it.
All right, Ben. Thank you so much for having me.
Another thank you to Paul Biancardi for the insight and the ACC landscape on the Syracuse landscape. And one guy that we kind of left off talking about and kind of just chatted at the end there, Benny Williams, a four-star small forward, 6'8", 180 guy, recruited by Adrian Autry. And he's a big-time player. And I think we talk about these guys in terms of Richmond and Newton and Salem as coming in and being a little bit of a role guy and not sure how the impact is. Benny Williams could pan out to be an immediate impact guy and an immediate big time player for the Orange.
For sure. This is a big recruit for Syracuse. I don't think this can be understated. He's 50 on the ESPN 100 for 2021, which makes him the highest ESPN ranked recruit since Jalen Carey for Syracuse.
Ooh.
He's the, which, you know, we know how that turned out, but that's a whole different story. He's the top player in the state of Maryland, and he's got great raw skills. I think he's a low floor, high ceiling guy for me. Mm-hmm. So I will say I could see it not panning out, but only if he doesn't fill out. He's pretty thin at 6'8", and he was playing a lot of four and five in high school, but he's really a wing. And he's a pretty dynamic scorer. I think he can shoot it. He's almost a more refined Woody Newton for me, and he's a year younger, but he needs to put on weight. And that's the difference for me. If he puts on weight, he might lead this team in a year or two. And seriously put up – I could see him putting up double-digit numbers as a freshman. He's got this whole season. Who knows what the high school basketball situation will be, especially with some of the showcases shutting down this year. But – he's got a whole year to put on weight. And if he can get from 180 even to 200 as an incoming freshman, 6'8", 200 makes a big difference. And he could be pretty unstoppable. With extra weight, I think he'll be a problem for a lot of other teams in the ACC.
It'll be interesting to see that Newton and Williams dynamic when they're both at Syracuse together. I think it's going to be a really good competition for minutes. They're going to be pushing each other. Both are going to really improve, and whoever's not playing is going to be wanting to play. So that's going to be a really beneficial relationship because they are similar players, and that could be a really big advantage for Boeheim if he's going to run a little bit deeper. I think these guys have the potential to make it not a deep, deep team, but more than the 7-8 guys that Boeheim is used to have one more name of a really capable guy off the bench. I think this group of four, when you look at 2020 and 2021, has the capabilities of doing that. And one of the big things with Williams is he kind of serves as a little bit of a transition guy because the 2022 class has the makings. Right now, they're number two, obviously, in the country with Dior Johnson and that big signing and Dior looking to bring in other guys with him. So I think Benny Williams being a number 50 guy and a top 50 ESPN guy really works as a nice bridge. So Syracuse isn't just going from not nobody recruits, but lower tier recruits to the highest caliber recruits in the country. I think it serves as a really nice bridge for guys coming in 2021 to say you can play with a big star or a big time talent in Williams now. And then you've also got the capabilities in the next year. I mean, granted that Dior Johnson is not able to go straight to the NBA or decommits for some reason. And as I know, there's some stuff up in the air. And obviously, if the NBA rule changes, Dior will go. But this is going to be big time in terms of getting class of 2021 guys, like another four-star guy, such as Samson Johnson we were talking about earlier, and guys like that, those four-star, high three-star guys that can come in knowing that they're going to play with some really big talents in the next year or two.
Williams, for me, what you mentioned with the fit with Newton, I think is even one of the most important things. I think Benny Williams has great positional versatility. I don't know if I make this statement if he doesn't put on weight, but I think he can play 2 through 4 probably in an offense.
Yeah.
2 would be a big lineup. 4 would be a pretty small one. He probably fits best at 3. But I think he fits in well depending on which other guys work out. You know, if Richmond works out and he's the long-term 2, maybe Williams is the 3. But if he doesn't work out and Newton works out, then maybe Williams is the 2. I think he's got the quickness to play the top of the zone. And at 6'8", that would be really elite length to have at the top there. And then Samson Johnson, as you mentioned, if he comes in, he's probably more of a 4. He's pretty physical, like Anselm. And at 6'10", 200, as now a senior, was a junior in high school when those measurements were taken, that's very solid. Of course, Johnson is a top recruit in the country. He's 70 on the ESPN 100, I believe. And to pick up 2 guys in the top 70, that would be really successful for Syracuse. I think they got some tough competition with Johnson. It's a lot of local teams, and he's a local guy coming from New Jersey, so it's not surprising. Mm-hmm. But that would be a big win for them. They already beat out UConn and some of the other local competitors when they grabbed Richmond. To do it again with Johnson, I think would start to establish a little bit of dominance again in the Northeast that Syracuse hasn't been able to completely maintain over the last 5 or so years, but it was something that they did have when they were a great team in the Big East.
Yeah, I think this is really the upward trajectory for Syracuse basketball recruiting. Obviously, things took a big hit when Jim Boeheim and the Syracuse program lost out on what was 8 scholarships, so 2 scholarships a year for 4 seasons, which was huge in terms of recruiting. And then you throw the loss of Mike Hopkins in on top of that. They really took a huge hit in their recruiting, but I feel like they're on the rise again. They've really started to figure things out. Alan Griffin, Adrian Autry figuring things out with the bigs and the small forward kind of guys. And Jerry McNamara has really kind of filled his role and found his stride recruiting wise and has made a really big, signing in terms of Dior Johnson and looking into some other guys. He is such a strong recruiter. So I think Syracuse has really started to figure that out and find their stride in terms of recruiting to bring in not the biggest names. That's never been Syracuse and Jim Boeheim's mantra, but to bring in those bigger guys that are going to be able to be 2, 3, 4 year guys that are going to be strong 4-star contributors. And if they leave to the NBA after their junior year, that's what they're fine with. But these are going to be guys that can be in Syracuse for a few years. And I think that that's a really strong start for Syracuse. And you see some nice names in 2020, some big names already looking to add in 2021. And then obviously Christian Dior in 2022 to get that going and really start to bring things together. So a lot kind of starting to figure itself out for Syracuse recruiting. I think they're right on the premise of breaking through and becoming a top tier ACC team again. And that's where we'll leave you for the day. Follow along with us at Ostrom Avenue Pod on Twitter, Ostrom Avenue Podcast, wherever you get your podcasts. Give us a review there, 5-star ranking. Reach out to us on Twitter. Let us know thoughts for future episodes. Tell us what you think about these new recruits and the incoming freshmen, the future guys on the recruiting track right now. Let us know your thoughts, questions you might have. At Ostrom Avenue Pod on Twitter. As always, with Ben Shulman, I'm Owen Valentine. Thank you so much. This has been the Ostrom Avenue Podcast. Stay safe. We'll catch you next week.